Zeit für mich, dann singe ich ein Lied für dich. Von 99 Luftballon. Have we blown up yet, guys?
Oh, not yet. We'll be all right. I'm not under my my 1980s bomb shelter yet, so I'm good.
Welcome to the Tuesday Live. And if you don't know what a 1980s bomb shelter is, you can find them at antique stores. They look a lot like little kids' school desks, as if that was going to do anything at all to help in the event of the big one going off. But I've been hearing a lot of talk about that. So I'm on with John Willis from Special Operations Equipment. We've got Jack Spierko, the Survival Podcast. I'm Nicole Soss from the Living Free Podcast. And we are here to talk about what y'all want to talk about. But let's start with Once Around the Horn. What do you think? Is this the big one?
No, I'm not worried about a country who Texas National Guard could take out. I'm not, and I'm not gonna, and you can't make me, and I'm not afraid, so whatever. That's it.
John?
Well, apparently there was just a bunch of assassinations. Apparently they just took out a bunch of their upper-level leadership yesterday again, and I'm just looking at all the stuff they're throwing at us here in the United States as though Ukraine is over with and Iran has ceased to exist.
Yeah.
You know, the whole Idaho situation, and there's some super weird stuff around that.
Yeah, yeah, we've been doubling down here on building out what we can in the holler and not really paying all that much attention to the day-to-day, but let's talk about the Idaho thing, because that was an interesting one.
You know, I'm not generally for hooking people up by their ankles to the back of a vehicle and slowly dragging them down the road until they are unalive, but had that dude not been found dead, that would have been a perfect punishment.
Well, how did he get dead? Like, why are they not saying
that? I don't know, man, because they said he was found dead, but they also said in the same news release that the local sheriff determined it was time to eliminate him. So was he popped by sheriff's deputies, or did he unalive himself? I don't think we really know that.
And they said that there was two aerial assets, two choppers in the air with sniper teams in the bird. They've not said how he was unalived. They've not said what gun he was using, so it's definitely not an AR.
They said it was a sporting type rifle, so it probably was either an AR, AR variant, or something like that.
It was a high-powered rifle on the article I read.
Which means nothing. Like, the American journalists writing that term should be like, as soon as they write it, their computer should electrocute them because they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Right, so we don't really know. I mean, if I was doing something that horrible and I didn't want to miss, I'd probably be using a bolt action. You're going against unarmed people. Accuracy is more important than speed of fire. But the reports I read were a high rate of fire. So it's probably semi-auto. It's probably an AR or an AK or some variant thereof, just because they're the most common.
Lots of conspiracy-wise, lots of weird things surrounding the sheriff there. Lots of weird things as to the owner of the Black Hawk helicopter, the corporation where it's the bird was apparently registered, goes to just some little random building that has been out of business and shut down for 6 or 7 years. But the corporation or the NGO that holds the helicopter shows millions and millions of dollars of revenue on Duns and Bradstreet. There's a bunch of weird stuff that I don't know who data mined that, but I heard Bear had a bunch of it put together that he was presenting.
I don't know. I kind of default back to not everything's a conspiracy theory.
Not everything, but there's not a lot of weird shit in all of it.
So if I wanted to, as a like global terrorist organization, make a big impact on things, I think shooting a couple firefighters in Idaho is probably not going to get it done. It just doesn't seem like the venue for something this sophisticated. Like, I don't mean to put the guys down that lost their lives. I mean, all firefighters to me are some of the most noble people we have and most thankless heroes we have. But they weren't like key critical people to some sort of larger plan or something like that. Mm-hmm. Firefighters in Coeur d'Alene.
Especially with 4th of July coming up.
Yeah. That could turn into something. But do you show your hand with something little and meaningless like this? Like, and I say meaningless, again, I'm not putting down anybody involved, just that, like, on the grand scale of things, this is not something that alters the course of earthly events.
It does for families, but not for everyone.
Absolutely. And so does if those two guys were in a truck and it wrecked and went down a hill. Right. Mm-hmm. The net effect on the total, other than the terror aspect, because now you're like, if you're a firefighter, like I could go out and get shot. And this is to me very analogous to like what went on with like the DC sniper team, where there were people like, even my own wife, she's like, our house, we had this huge open picture window that looked out across the field to the neighbor's house. And like, she wanted to close the drapes. And I'm like, honey, we're like 450 miles north of DC. I'm not too worried about it, but like that got in her head. So I know it got lots of people's heads. So there is an effect that way.
I was hanging out in DC when that happened.
Yeah, they were looking.
I was like, do I put gas in the car or not put gas in the car today? Is today the day? Yeah.
And I understood that because that was part of my territory back then, and I kind of had a little over-the-shoulder look here and there when I was down there until it was over. But the other side of that is even if you were in D.C., you had a better chance of being hit and killed by a car than shot, just by the numbers, just by the math. I mean, the world's a dangerous place. It's bad shit happens all the time, unfortunately. Do I think Iran might pull some shit like that? Maybe. But do I think that's where they would do it? I don't know. It just doesn't pass the initial.
Do I think Iran's going to pull something? No. Do I think something will be pulled and blamed on Iran? Yes. Like Iran? Like of all the people that are going to run terrorist operations, it's going to be Iran? No, they're going to blame it on Iran.
Well, it'll probably be an Iranian proxy, but it probably won't be Iran pulling strings. I think that's one of the things people need to understand about these false flags. It's not like they get a bunch of Delta Force operators together and go, guys, you're going to do this thing. Right? It's little nudges and little pushes by people in places like, you know, I see you guys on the server from Langley and what have you, right? I see you guys from Quantico. Like, it's those guys that at some level of Black Ops, basically they run under the cover of we're running an op to catch them. And then, whoops. And then we get the famous line. How often have we had the famous line? He was known to us.
He was on our radar.
He was on our radar. He was known to us. Say the line, Fed. He was known to us. Yay!
From the shooter, right? The shooter had been arrested for assault with a deadly weapon, which was a knife. I don't know if he actually stabbed or threatened somebody with it. He was sentenced to 1 year plus some time, and he was released after 10 days. He was supposed to take a anger management class. I never have heard whether he successfully completed that or not. Resided in Arizona with his mother. There was a lot of posts between him and his mother. They seemingly had a good relationship, but he was up there doing tree trimming or some kind of forestry work or something with his father. But he was known to law enforcement is what has been said.
Again,
mm-hmm.
They're always known to law enforcement. Again,
so
no, I don't
you
know,
are like, known to law enforcement.
Oh, I'm very known to law enforcement. Yeah, I'm very much so. Just not in a negative manner at the time.
Yeah. No, I'm known to law enforcement and not in a negative manner at all. I mean, most people are known to law enforcement in some way. But when they say that, they usually mean that, like, he was on our radar. We were watching him. He was on our radar. Like, there was reason for us. Like, we should have been paying attention to him now. And often it's, and we were, but whoops.
That
happened a lot.
We were developing him, and he got askew or got ahead of us is what they mean.
And there's so many things like that from the past, that, like Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
Right, Sandy Hook. And I'm not talking about the Alex Jones crap. I'm talking about the fact that there is audio of law enforcement saying they have another guy face down in the woods behind the school wearing camouflage, and then that just all
went away. Yeah, no question of it any longer.
I'm not saying that the thing didn't happen. I'm saying that there was other things going on. And I remember when that happened, talking to a person who is in my family that's in law enforcement. And he said flat out, that was probably somebody that was working that guy that lost control of him. And did he lose control or was he dictated to lose control, right? Like, I mean, I think that the point that, like, you have this teenage kid go pick up a bunch of weapons from his mom's house and drive to the school. That's the point, I'm thinking, I'm thinking that would be the point you go into action, right? You stop it before he goes in there and starts shooting people. So
look at you remember when they were going to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer, right?
Yeah.
16 arrested. 16 arrested. 13 of them were assets for FBI, local law enforcement, and vice versa. Yeah.
They were all. It was a Spider-Man thing where they're all pointing at each other, right? Like. FBI, ATF, NSA, CIA, local, sheriff's department. You're like, what the hell? Nobody hears who they say they are.
Look at all the times when all the after stories they tell years after they take down the motorcycle gangs and stuff.
Yeah.
You had DEA in there as a member. You had FBI as a prospect. You had local law. Like, everybody in there, half the motorcycle was law enforcement.
The other person was an operative. Yeah. Right? Like maybe two of them from DEA knew each other. But they didn't know this guy over here that they thought they were working was an FBI agent that thought he was working them, right? And then there was a sheriff's deputy on a U.S. Marshals task force looking for this guy that was a fugitive, and he was in the mix. And none of them know that the other one's there. And all of them, you know what they're doing. Come on, man. Let's go do it. Let's go do it. That's what it's straight up like they're instigating these situations.
How much of law enforcement is actually committing the crimes?
A lot.
Yeah.
Because I had to keep my cover.
Mm-hmm.
I had to keep my cover. I've verified that with several different people in law enforcement that they've committed absolute serious crimes.
Right.
In the purpose of establishing cover.
Yeah, that's why they're able to testify anonymously.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's been interesting to watch this in the context of I'm actually digging into the Fourth Turning book, which I sort of listened to once, but I'm reading it now, and they're talking about, in that Fourth Turning, right before it, crime moves up, and isolated instances of violent outbreaks from the individual.
Yep.
However, Jack had a segment, I think maybe 6 weeks ago, about we're on the other side.
I think we've been living through the Fourth Turning.
Yeah.
I really do. We have to have war. We had 20 fucking years of pointless war. 20 continuous years of war. I'm thinking that qualifies. Look at the crime rates. The crime rates skyrocket. Well, they did. Inflation skyrockets. Trust in institutions reaches an all-time low. Hello.
Yeah, banks collapse.
What box have we not ticked? And people are, I think the problem is because people are most familiar with the last Fourth Turning being World War II, they're expecting it to look like that. Well, if you go back to the book Nicole's reading and you read all the turnings, right, none of them look exactly the same. They just have certain characteristics. So if you're waiting for World War III to be the Fourth Turning, you haven't studied history enough to understand what a Fourth Turning is. And we don't always get four.
And that's a 73-year cycle. Is that what that says, the Fourth
Turning? About 80 to 100 years. And in the Civil War Fourth Turning, we skipped the third. We had the first, the second, and the fourth. We went straight. Like, there is no guarantee you get an exact replication of the pattern. And when I look at where we're headed next, this looks like a reconstitution to me. And then you get a high, and everybody thinks that a high means everything is super, everything's wonderful, and everybody loves me. Well, the 50s and 60s were a pretty good time to be a blue-collar person in this country, but it wasn't nirvana. I mean, there's a lot of people, if they think it was so much better back then, if you picked their little young ass up and dropped them in 1952, they'd fold up in a ball on the ground and cry themselves to death.
Well, you had to work hard.
Yeah.
You didn't have air conditioning.
But you had to earn it. I mean.
Yeah. Well, yeah, everybody was working hard, and you didn't have the luxuries we have today.
Yeah, like real work.
Baseline luxuries, like 5 t-shirts a week. You might not necessarily have 5 shirts a week.
Air conditioning.
Air conditioning. Running water. Flushing toilets.
Air conditioning
was a big
luxury. In the
50s, still outhousing it, man.
Yeah. My grandparents installed their bathroom with a flushing toilet in 1958. I mean.
Yeah. When we moved here 20 years ago, there were still people in this county that had outhouses. There still are people with outhouses.
Of course there are.
I mean, I have outhouses.
Yeah,
well,
that was their primary hole.
Yeah, they're hauling water to their properties.
Yeah.
And it's still allowed.
Allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I dare you to prevent me from having an outhouse. That's going to... What are you going to do? Take it away? Steal it?
How would you even know?
Somebody will be by to tersely.
I mean, I'll take the, just put another one on top of it, right? You know how you do that if you need to. You get a used Port-A-John and cut a hole in the floor.
Yeah.
Then it's just a Port-A-John.
Yeah. You can buy those. Like, yeah. You can buy brand new ones.
You can probably buy a new one for less than you can build one if you were using new lumber.
Yeah, we were about $1,600 for each one when they built those that we have here, and that was 2019. So, man, every
Port-A-John for that.
You can buy a brand new one for about $2,000 when I looked.
Well, Danny, yeah, it's not, and all you need is a sawzall, and you're in business. And they're designed to move, so when you dig your next hole, you just take a hand truck and.
Yeah, we just
discovered a loophole here.
We just use composting, you know, toilets.
Yeah.
They have a little toilet seat in them.
My favorite loophole was at Polyface where they have flushing toilets and sinks.
Yeah.
Flowing into a tank.
Yeah.
And no drain fields. And he's like, I had all these porta potties every time we had an event, and now I just get that flushed. It cost me the same, and everybody's way happier.
Just like they come pump your porta john, they just come pump the tank.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can't see a problem with that.
You know, the county might have a problem with that if they know, well, not his, but mine might, because the only acceptable thing is porta potties or an approved septic system. But I was like, well.
You live in a part of Tennessee, though, where the line is that level 3 body armor might be uttered.
Yeah. Yeah, but is also they are trying to do the planning commission is trying to do zoning in my county right now.
Mm-mm.
And I lived through zoning in Oregon, and now I live in Tennessee, basically as a result of the political impact of what zoning does in rural areas.
It's creeping, though. It's coming.
Yeah, so I'm starting to go to the meetings. Like, I hate it. I hate it, but I'm going to the meetings, and I'm not going there as an adversary. I just want to see what's going on. The commission is, it's like the committee's handing it to the commission, and the commission's doing nothing right now. They're just like, okay, that's nice. So they if have, they keep doing that, that'd be good.
So they have all our meetings in the courthouse, and they have a deputy sheriff there, and you have to go through metal detectors, and they don't allow any phones. So anything that's said or threatened to the public, or when somebody speaks up and they want to put their thumb down on that dude, there's no evidence of it having happened. There's no phones allowed in there. You can't go to the thing. They make you go and take your phone and put it in a vehicle.
Can you have a camera?
Mm-mm.
No recording devices.
Nothing.
How do they get away with that for the open meeting?
I don't know how they get away with it.
I'm just going to say there's a lot of recording devices that are easy to conceal at this point, and many of them are available at tspaz.com.
Correct, but you have to go through the metal detector as you go into the courthouse.
Oh. Well, just do what Stone did. Put it in a Rubik's Cube and throw it to the guard, and then
get
it on the other side, right? There's always a way.
Yeah. Okay, so what's up in your gardens, guys? We just had 100-degree days, which is not garden's favorite time of year. So how'd your stuff do through that, John?
Our garden's awesome because Curie went through and planted everything. I watered this morning. Everything's full growing. I'm about to just completely pull the little squash we have out because the squash bugs are already so crazy. Turn a leaf over, there's hundreds of little teeny ones. So I've been pulling leaves off and pulling leaves with eggs and crushing big ones, but I don't really eat squash. We've got 2 squash plants and thousands of squash bugs already. So when they get to that point, we just terminate them. The tomatoes are awesome. We've got like purple Cherokee tomatoes, I think is what they are. We've got black tomatoes. We've got all the tomatoes you brought in are all planted. Everything's looking awesome. We've got huge loads of peaches. We got a peach tree that we're going to pull, I don't know, probably 30 gallons of peaches off of. We're probably going to pull 20 gallons of blueberries in the next couple of days. The pears are awesome. I've got apple trees that have huge apples that we've never had apples on before. This year is the year, which means we won't get anything off of those for the next year or two. But it's incredible right now.
It does not hurt to have Tim Riley on your side in your orchard.
And the insane amount of rain, I think, too.
Yeah. We got no fruit here, Eve, despite the rain.
We didn't last year.
Because of a freeze. I had a late freeze, and that was it.
We've had that for 4 years. We'd get warm in the winter, and we'd have just amazing flowers, beautiful flowers on all the peach trees. And then two weeks of like under 20 degree weather and nothing that year.
Just kills all the blossoms. They freeze. Like you touch the blossom, you're like, yeah, it feels like just hard and crunchy. It's never coming back.
Almost Angie there, ninja skills. Put the camera on your keychain. Look at that.
Yeah.
Jack Amish.
That's what I'm saying. There's always a way. The keys go in the thing. The recording device is on the keychain.
This is a good one. They make glasses with cameras now.
Yeah, they sure do.
Wear your AI glasses.
Yeah.
What you wear is you make sure they're wireframe, and then that way they have to go in the little cup.
Yeah, our guy was out here with those filming the whole time at Amanda's party.
Yeah, your AI glasses. Have you seen some of the shit? And I don't think it works that great yet. But we're literally on the cusp of, like, the Star Trek Universal Translator. There are devices now that you're sitting there talking to somebody in Spanish, and it's about a three-second delay, and it's literally in your ear translating to English.
Yep. And I watch YouTube channels where dudes are walking around China just speaking into their phone back and forth, and it takes a few seconds longer, but it's very doable.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's like you talk all and then the guy has to wait back and forth. We're like, this is going like real time. So like you're still talking and I'm just hearing like four or five words ago. And so it's kind of like being on a like a sat radio with like a 4 second delay.
Yep.
And then when I talk back, if you have one too, it's just going back. It's literally the universal translator.
I've seen a commercial for it. The dude's like, I know you hate going to my parents' house because they speak Spanish. I got you this.
Yeah.
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 Get an ankle monitor. They hold all kinds of stuff.
Just carry my garage door open.
That's interesting. It just has to look like an ankle monitor. You can't tell me to take it off. It's an ankle monitor.
Yeah.
There's always a way.
It probably already exists, Jack.
Yeah.
I bet you.
The phony ankle monitor? Oh, I guarantee you.
Yeah, phony ankle monitor, camera.
I guarantee you prop companies sell them.
Yeah.
You think those are real ankle monitors in movies and TV shows?
I'm sure you can buy a real one.
But, I mean, our meetings are live streamed, I think.
I'm sure you can buy a real one and just take the guts out of it. Even.
Yeah, you could do that, too. But it's probably cheaper to buy a prop one. They even sell prop money.
You could probably trade
it. It looks so close, and there's just little things on it that make it really obvious that it's not.
Just go to Walmart and find the dude wearing the ankle monitor and trade him some gift cards for it. I'm sure he'd come off of it.
That might cause a problem though. So you're sitting there taping the thing and the marshals come grab you, right? Like you're not supposed to be there. I'm not him. Yeah, well, you still have a problem. Stolen government property and illegally recording a government
There we go. Decoy ankle monitor.
I don't see how anything that's public and government can be banned from being recorded. I don't.
It most definitely is. You can see it in the local Facebook group. We've got a dude that moved here. He moved here actually because of us. His name is Nick Bolton, and he is very anti anything structure or government. Yeah. And he's very well spoken. Like when you talk to him in person, it's not the same dude. But when he makes videos, he is very well spoken. And he showed up at a bunch of these, and they just started losing their shit over it. I think he's actually the reason they started moving these things into the courthouse specifically so that they could not be recorded.
Asking you sell receive.
I feel like there's pushback on that through the transparency office, like literally.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk over it, but it has not changed.
They get sued. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, Freedom Inc.
Yeah.
Freedom Inc. is his YouTube channel.
There you go. $48.
Would that pass, Bob?
I bet it would. I mean, what are they going to say? You're not allowed in because you have an ankle monitor?
Yes. We used to go to Wednesday court because we always had an employee. Caught it. It's like Jerry Springer in there on Wednesday. It's literally like Jerry Springer. It's like television court. And we would go just to see what was going to happen in the crazy stuff. And they won't let you wear any shirts with print. So I had to go out to the truck, change. Like it's just asinine. I had to go change and put on pants because you're not allowed to wear shorts in the courthouse.
You don't have shirts without print.
I did not have shirts. I ended up turning one inside out and backwards.
Military invests in the molar mic that can route calls through your teeth.
Yeah, they've had.
I am not signing up for that.
That's been around for, well, that's been around in the early 20s. This was the first that we'd heard of those.
Lucille Ball had a whole story about picking up something through her teeth.
Mm-hmm.
And the way she told the story, it didn't sound like an entertainer being entertaining. It sounded very legitimate, and it was excruciatingly detailed. And it was when her mouth was in a certain position, like the gap was a certain position between fillings or something like that.
I vaguely remember that.
Okay, we have a big question. I'll read the whole thing. Okay. I'm wrestling with the balance between maintaining order and property values in rural areas without becoming another layer of government overreach. I believe people should be left alone as much as possible, but I've also seen firsthand how one neglected property or reckless neighbor can hurt the entire rogue community. For instance, raw sewage running into others. Thoughts?
I moved to a place with no codes or zoning. If I don't want to see what my neighbor's doing, I should have planted bamboo 10 years ago. I don't like the shithole across the street sometimes, but they also can't come and say anything about me. When we moved to Tennessee, we moved into one of the only what used to be HOAs. It was a private community, circle in a circle, about 2 miles, had a tennis court and the whole thing. The HOA was defunct, but I moved in with a trailer on my massive driveway. My property was about 2.5 acres, and I had the smallest house. And they were having HOA meetings, even though there was no HOA, about my house. And having the property I have now, I have enough offset. You can't see what's in the property. And the best thing we ever did was put up gates and fences. But just the same, I don't get to say what my neighbor does, the same as he doesn't get to say what I do.
Yeah, yeah. I'm with Tom here, which is raw sewage running onto someone else's property is a direct violation of the other person's property rights. What you do on your property is your business. When it impacts my property in the form of raw sewage or you're felling trees on my property, then that is an area where something should be done. I look at their, in my county, they have banned crypto mining facilities without them going through a pre-approval process because people don't like that big buildings have lights.
And the massive booming, the droning sounds.
So instead of targeting crypto mining, they could have decided that, you know, noise after a certain time at night is not reasonable if it's audible on somebody else's property.
Well, over specify decibel, right? Like decibel reading. Like it has nothing to do with crypto mining. If your neighbor is blasting, you know, Beastie Boys rap from the 80s and your wall's going, you have the same problem. So my problem with all the noise ordinances and things like that is they never specifically specify what exactly is like, where's the threshold? Like, whether we agree or not, at least DUI laws say, like, you know, 0.08. So 0.078, right? And 0.09 is, right? And it's a very clear thing because I've had shit with, like, I was sitting on my porch at this apartment I had back when I was in my early 20s, and I'm listening to some music, and it's, like, soft jazz. And the cop is literally standing halfway up the stairs. I'm on the second floor. So he's 15 feet from me. He can't hear it where he's standing. But my neighbor behind me has complained about it, and he wants me to turn it down anyway because it's a nuisance. I'm like, bro, you're telling me you can't hear it right now. He's like, yes, I want you to turn it down anyway. I'm like, then write me a ticket. And he got all pissed and he left. He didn't write me a ticket. But he honestly could have because it's subject to his judgment.
It's who's easier to appease, right?
Yeah.
It's just like when the mob was outside the house and the dude pointed the shotgun and they arrested the dude in the house.
Yeah.
Because they can't arrest the mob.
No.
They can't. It's easier to appease. We can just remove the peace from the situation. We don't care if they burn his house down while he's gone.
Yeah.
As law enforcement, they don't care.
It probably didn't hurt in that situation that it turned out that the guy that was talking to me and we had a longer discussion, my brother-in-law was his supervisor.
Yeah,
that's probably why he left without writing me a ticket.
Karen's complaining about the fireworks. You're going to see a ton of that. It seems like there are a lot more fireworks stands this year than I've ever seen before. And we have a lot of new influx of people from the coast that have never been here for the 4th of July, and they are going to lose their shit over my animals are scared or whatever. Like, I don't know what to tell you. It's the 4th of July.
My animals are going to be scared.
It's up to you to take actions for your animals because you know it's coming. We have the same thing because this place here is like, it looks like a war zone. And it'll go for about 6 hours on the 4th, especially with the 4th being on a Friday. And it will go again on Saturday. And it will go a little bit on Sunday. We call it the dog wars because the dogs don't like it. But that's our responsibility.
It's starting Thursday if it hasn't already started, though, right?
We've had a few salvos and like skirmishes go on already in the dog wars. But it's already started like on next door. The Karens are out and it's every excuse in the world not to do it. People get hurt. People blow their fingers off. Like you don't care, Karen. You don't
veterans
care.
Veterans have PTSD. Yes, they do. There's one on my property. He doesn't love it, but he doesn't complain about it.
Well, and so we're like this little island where we're allowed to do it because we're unincorporated. So if it's really that big of a deal for you, leave. Right. I shouldn't have to leave. Well, your neighbor also shouldn't have to like completely change the way they live life to accommodate you. Like it's give and take. It's, you know, what we're back to is the same debate always. Do you value liberty and freedom or safety and security?
Well, right.
And most people will say they value liberty and freedom. But when it comes down to it, where the metal meets the road, they always default. They'd rather have safety and security, which means daddy government fix it for me.
And they don't want to do it.
The reason the Karens go nuts in places like this or where John lives, because there is no daddy government to fix it for them. If they call our local sheriff's department, they'll say, and are they firing the fireworks at the roof of your house?
Yep.
Is something on fire? Did they blow up a car? Are they shooting at the cars driving down the road? And when you say no to all that, they'll say, so if you call us again, we are going to come out and we're going to cite you for wasting our time. So then they completely lose their shit on social media because it's their only outlet.
And they want to call other men to come talk to you anonymously and send guys with guns to handle it when they're mad about the booms, but they'll send those guys there. Yeah.
It's the same thing over and over again. Violence by proxy.
Always. Yeah.
It's always cowards that do violence by proxy.
Yeah. There'll be threads about us a couple times a month in the local Facebook group, because they'll detonate Tannerite, right? We'll do some video that always has some Tannerite in it, and there'll be a whole thread. And even when it's not us, it's always, oh, that was SOE, that was SOE. They're blowing up beaver dams over here, but that was SOE. We won't even be in town on a weekend. I got a phone call from a sheriff a couple weeks ago, said, hey, are you guys shooting? I said, no. He said, did you hear anybody shooting? I go, I hear everybody shooting. Everybody was, there's five or six people shooting this morning.
Yeah.
Well, a bullet left a property. I go, it's not us. We have huge berms. Nobody shot on the property. I'm not even in town. Turns out it was the neighbor kid. But it's always default us. We've never had a projectile leave the property ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Karens.
World War III to the south of Fort Worth already after 6 p.m. Neighbors 2 houses over are absolute party animals. Just amazed at the resilience of parties.
If you go south of me, south of the city, you get another little island of unincorporation down there. And that's just how it is here. If you're not in a city, you don't have many, like a whole bunch of rules and regulations just do not apply to you. There's no zoning. I mean, I don't even have to charge, like, you know, with sales tax, you usually have like a local and then a state. Mm-hmm. So if I ran a retail business like over in my East Pasture where people came and bought product, even though most of the state taxes, the sales tax is 8.5, mine would be 6. Because 6 is actually the state sales tax rate, and that other 3.5 is always the local government wanting their piece. I don't even have that. And so, yeah, I don't know who they think they're, and they do, they threaten to call all the time. I see it on Nextdoor. Well, I'm going to call the sheriff. Look, go ahead. See how it works out for you.
Man.
And I'm not saying to be an ass either, like, if you have neighbors that have a problem with what you're doing, you have a larger property, you know, maybe you shift. You got Karen on this side and Joe on this side. Maybe you shift to the Joe side of the property a little bit. But in the end, people are going to do what they're going to do.
Yep.
Yeah, I had band practice in Portland, Oregon, and my next door neighbor got very distressed about how loud the drum was coming out of my basement. And I just was like, okay, we'll end by this time. I was like, I'm showing you the insulation. We're putting it on that side of the house. I'm moving to the other side of the basement.
Yeah.
And once I made those concessions, he could still hear it, but he was fine.
Yeah.
Like, don't go to 9:05 p.m. and I'm fine. Yeah.
There are two kinds of people that complain to their neighbors about noise. There's the kind of person that's sitting in their house. It's 5 o'clock in the evening. You know, they're watching TV and they can hear your noise louder than their TV. And that person generally is looking for some level of accommodation like you had. And then there's the person that's literally on their porch listening, looking mm-hmm. for something to be upset by. And they're generally, that's like the boomer generation that seems to do that a lot. And I see it as an extension of what you see on social media with like the young people that are looking for something to be offended by. They're just in different places that they're seeking their offense, right? Like the Gen Zs are worried about canceling Dukes of Hazzard or something. The show's been off the air for 4 years and you're worried about it. Like I don't get it.
They just need bigger properties.
Yeah.
Aaron
That's
says
the worst thing we need is even our subdivisions, they're
on top of each other.
It's so ridiculous. And I get it in some places where they don't have a lot of land, but in most of America, there's no reason that subdivisions shouldn't be at least kind of like half-acre lots. I've lived in subdivisions with minimum one-acre lot, and you'd be surprised how much better neighbors get along as soon as you do that.
We've been seeing all these beautiful lots. Like, we were in Columbia, Tennessee last night. Absolutely beautiful properties. And there's these huge developments going in that say efficiency or affordable apartments. Like, you have vineyards across the street, huge, beautiful farms, and they're putting affordable apartments. Like, I could just imagine Grandpa just rolling over in his grave over that shit. But as far as, like, the dogs barking all the time, I don't know what your situation is, Aaron. Like, I live on 10 acres of property. My nearest neighbor's 20 acres back there, and I hear her dogs if I go outside. And my dogs, because we have livestock guardian dogs, their job is to bark all night long. And that's what they do. If you moved into a community or an HOA, a lot of them have, you know, no dog over 15 pounds or no dog outside at night. You got to marry into that or you get what you get. Like, don't move next to me. I've got all kinds. Like, I'm building a zoo. Like, you're going to hate it here.
But we all want to see the zoo.
I have a girl in my audience named Danielle who's been in my audience since like 08. And she's the epitome of that, where she has like 10 acres her and her husband have, and they have like pigs and shit and everything. And they built a development like that literally borders her property.
Yep.
And after they built the development, they organized an HOA, and they always tried to rope her into it. She basically just tells them to F off. Like, yeah, we're not part of it. And then they'll make a rule, and they'll tell her about it, and she's like, yeah, I don't care. It doesn't apply to me.
HOA.
I'm not part of your shit. I'm not part of your subdivision. I have nothing to do. And they'll, but we all voted and just, yeah, that's great. Good for you. Like, I'm glad you voted. Now do something about it. And of course they can't do anything because she's not part of it. This is one thing to know. If somebody forms an HOA and it's already like your house is already there and the HOA wasn't there when you bought your house, they can't make you be part of it. They can't, an HOA does not have the power like a city does of annexation. They can't make you be part of it.
Yep.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you really want to live in a place that is protected for certain visual things, then by all means, you need to be in an HOA. But realize you're opting into an extra layer of government. And for some people, that's a good fit. That's fine. It's not a good fit for me, but for some people, it's a good fit.
Yeah, Jack had the idea to do an HOA where you had to have farms and have farm animals.
I mean, that's kind of what's happening here.
Have a pond and you know, fields, and it sounded awesome.
Yeah. Like, one of the rules of our HOA is if you complain about your neighbor in any way, you get thrown out.
Yeah, you have to show up to shoot once a week. 13
yeah, you have
acres.
To go, yeah, you have to own a gun. You have to own at least one livestock animal.
Yeah, Aaron,
you're
I'm
one chicken, but you got to have at least one. That way you can't bitch about anybody else's.
And Aaron, I just saw your comment. I'm definitely not picking on you. It's shoot, shovel, and shut the fuck up is really the answer in a situation like that. Sometimes you just have to handle the problem. The problem is handled, and I don't know how the problem got handled.
Yeah. Yeah.
The fuck up. Well, I mean, yeah. How much better would life be?
They're not on an SOE t-shirt yet.
How much better would life be? Because it's always the old man that has no problems because he handled them and nobody knows how the problem was handled.
Yeah.
It's the young, dumb, hot-headed dipshit that's all over the internet making the threats.
Yeah, yeah. Don't ever threaten anything. That just proves you did it.
No.
Even if you didn't do it, it still proves you did it.
Yeah, always shovel first. Have the hole ready.
Yeah, the hole should already pre-exist the action.
The complaining on the internet is you need somebody else to handle your problems.
Well, nobody wants...
That's why you're doing it.
They're testing the waters to see, right? Because they're not going to handle it themselves. They're looking for the mob mentality to get behind them so it's not just them.
They're trying to validate their bullshit, basically. Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to get enough people upset that they don't have to be the spearhead of it.
Back to violence by proxy. It's just another form of violence by proxy. And what amazes me, like this all started with the fireworks. This happens every year. It's the same people every year. They've been doing it. I've been here since 2013, so 12 years. They've been doing it for 12 years. They've probably been doing it for 20 years. And they actually, it's that insanity thing of doing the same thing and expecting a different result. Because the same thing always happens. They throw up all their BS, and everybody tells them to go get fucked. I mean, then they're upset that they were told, like, well, this happened last year, and the year before, and the year before, and the year before, and the year, and so on. And what did you think was going to happen this year? And I think there's always this idea that if they come up with a new form of emotional pleading, that this time will be different. Well, Karen, I'm sorry, it's not. Oh, did y'all see the video I posted with the Karen with the ducks?
No.
The super Karen. Oh, my God. She's flipping out. She's in California, of course.
I did see it. They were in
the breeding, and she's screaming, get off of her! She's like screaming to the crowd like no one will. And she ends up going in the water to like separate these breeding cowards.
Yeah, there's no consensual sex in the poultry world.
And then people are like, well, a lot of times they do drown. There wouldn't be any ducks.
I've never seen a duck drown from that.
No.
Ever.
No,
it does look a little horrific, but I've never seen it.
I've seen domestic ducks where you have an imbalanced flock and the drakes overbreed and literally breed a female to death. That is a thing. Yeah. But in a natural setting like that, no.
You see that?
She is losing her shit. And you're like, man, we got to put, like, controlled substance needs to start including Franzia, I think, and SSRIs. Like, there is something really wrong with the world that there's people like this that do this in public. I'm not saying there wasn't crazy 25 years ago, but crazy wasn't on display. And I know we have a lot more people with devices recording it, but if it was going on, you'd have heard about it 25 years ago, and you just didn't at this kind of frequency.
That's probably, they probably need cannabis like that.
Yeah.
That would help that.
Yeah. 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 And they need a nice, mellow, relaxing form. They don't need the energetic one. They need to like go to sleep and shut up one. They need a great big old blue edible is what they need.
I suppose.
Dense plants capture a ton of sound too. Like when we moved on the property, we had tons of pine trees, just tall, skinny, thick pine trees. And when the state came through and cut those down, you heard all the road noise. Every semi truck, you really hear it. And we're just waiting to see where they're going to cut that line, and then we're going to put bamboo or heavy something in there that'll just catch all that sound.
We lived in Pennsylvania. We had two rows of some kind of spruce, and they were spaced so they looked nice, and there was a second row, and the second row was lined up in the spaces, so it was like a baffle, and you couldn't hear shit from the road. And then our freaking neighbor, because it was on her property too, pruned out the underneath because they didn't like the way it looked going all the way to the ground, and then they started bitching about the freaking noise.
Yeah. Bamboo. You just intermittently plant bamboo. It'll grow both directions. She can't take care of it.
Yeah.
People don't know how sound works, Jack.
The question actually is, what thing, do people know how it works in general anymore?
You know what? I was talking to Alan Booker, and he said that they are doing basic earth science orientations with students because they don't know that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. They don't understand how the planet goes around the sun and the tilt for winter and summer. Like those basic things.
You mean the shit we learned in like sixth grade?
Yeah. And he's Alan, so he's completely non-judgmental about it. He's like, I can't teach permaculture topics if you don't know, you know,
the sun
how rain works or
in the west, and it's got a lower angle in the winter than it does in the summer.
Moon cycles or like tides or like all of those things.
Shadows are cast based on solar positioning. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What contour is and how it's everywhere, but it's not where you think it is. And I think this is I'm starting to see this as a fundamental problem that I've seen it really heavily this last 2 weeks in the Bitcoin space, but it's the same problem. You have all these people that think they're economic geniuses because they saw a video 5 years ago and they bought a few $1,000 worth of Bitcoin and now it's worth $10,000. So they must be a genius because they had success. But they don't know anything about finance, economics, bonds, stocks, ETFs, trading, financing, loans. They have an economic IQ of about 3. So I'm sure you saw last week this big announcement came out of the Federal Housing Administration that said if you have a lot of your net worth in Bitcoin, when you apply for a mortgage, you can now use the fact that you own that Bitcoin as part of your net worth equation. It's not collateral. It's you have it, so it would just be like saying, I have $200,000 in the bank. That way they know you're not broke after the down payment and you take the loan. Well, to do this, because it's Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, if you want whatever amount of Bitcoin you want attributed to your net worth, you need to put it on a recognized exchange and apply for the mortgage. And then after you get the mortgage, you can put it right back in self-custody. You cannot explain that to these people. They keep blathering off about you have to surrender your keys because it's collateral. They don't even know what it is. And that's one thing. It's one thing for a person not to know something. But when you explain it to them, like you say, if you would read the letter that you're upset about, not even what I'm saying, if you just read it, you would see that. And they lose their minds. That's what I call willful ignorance. It's not just that they weren't taught. It's that they refuse to learn because this is not a hard concept to grasp. I'm sure everybody listening to me right now that's not a special person understood exactly what I said. You know, if you didn't, what I'm saying is when you get a mortgage, there's a collateral component, which is the house itself, and there's a financial health equation. Should we give this person a loan? And how much are they worth is part of that equation. That's all that was. It's the best news that we've gotten on Bitcoin the last month. And they're angry about it and upset about it and screaming and shrieking about self-custody because they're economically illiterate by choice. And I think that like what you described with Alan's students, it's just like nobody learns the fundamentals of anything anymore.
And those are handy pieces of information to have. Like literally, if you pop out of the ground like a prairie dog in New York after being in the subway and you need to know which way is south, and it's a little harder to do in New York. You know what time of day it is. You have an idea of which way shadows are casting, right?
Yeah. New York probably is not the best example for
that. No, it isn't because the sun is – but actually it is because that is a situation where you come out of the ground disoriented or DC.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can tell by which way the trees – you know, there are trees in New York, by the way.
There's a lot of parts of the city, though. You can't see it. You can't.
Like, well, so then let's talk about map orientation.
Yeah,
if the number go up, you know.
You ever have somebody draw you a map and you're like, what the fuck is this? And when you realize, like, they have south that way on the map to the right, and you're like, okay.
Now you got to read it sideways.
And they don't understand why that's a problem. Like, literally every map in the world, I've been corrected because there's always the person like, well, actually. So cave maps are not that way. Okay, it's not a fucking cave, all right? Every other map on the planet, right, north is up for a reason. because there has to be a standard so that all maps work the same. It could be down for all I care, but it has to be the same. And this is the convention of cartography and humanity. And that's, you're back to what you were saying, Nicole. This is a base skill that you should kind of have mapped out by sixth, seventh grade. A sixth grader should be able to look at a map and go, which way is north? Well, it's up. Well, which way is west? Well, it's that way and there's east and that's south. I could. Not because I was smart, because, like, we actually learned that. But if you want to sell agendas, you can't give people information. That'll ruin it. How can you teach people about climate if you want to sell climate change as being caused by CO2? You can't teach them about climate, because then they would actually question what they know about climate versus what you're telling them about climate. So you can't, you have to, what I think we've had is a reductive approach to education. Like, anything that starts to cause a problem with intelligent questions, questioning authority, let's get rid of that so people will stop asking those questions.
And that's facilitated by GPS, because the view, like, I remember this when I first started using GPS being, it was like a disorientation because it was showing me the view in front of my car. Mm. And then I got used to it. And then I didn't know there was a setting you could do, but I was using it the other day and Tactical was in the car with me. He changed it to north is north.
Oh, on your side.
And I was like, what's going on? It looks different. He's like, well, north is north. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that's actually the way it should be.
Yeah,
but that's why they draw maps that way. Like, my perspective is here, so the map is from my perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, the first GPS has always showed north is actually the direction you were traveling. Right? So what I mean is the way you were traveling was up, even if it was west.
Yeah, that's the way the phone defaults right
now. Yeah, I don't like that. I like it to be like a map. I know how to read a map. So I want north up, and I want south down, and then we're good. Yeah. It's not a video game. I'm not in a first-person driving game or something where I'm, like, I guess that's what Tesla needs to drive, but I'm not Tesla. I just need to know how to get where I'm going. And by the way, can anybody under 30 get somewhere without a GPS today?
No. A lot of people over 30 can't.
Yeah. Including places they've been to, like, 18 times. You know what I mean? Like, they've been there over in, like, a friend's house, but they can't get to their friend's house without turning the GPS on.
Yep.
I can get to John's, like, multiple ways.
Yeah.
Like, four or five different routes.
And the first time I went, I totally used the GPS. But it's such a simple place to get to once you know, I don't need it anymore. Go north, hit that, and go that way.
Yeah. Watch out for the guy with the forklift at that one corner.
Yeah. I do love
I've almost hit that forklift like five times.
Or shit falling off the forklift.
For this reason. You ask somebody, where is John's place, right, if you've never been before, or where's my Airbnb? And they start talking to you like you lived in a place your whole life. Well, take the 41 down to the 383. Take that north over to the – they stop. Stop. I don't know any of that fucking shit. And if I did, I wouldn't have asked you where it was. Give me an address.
Shit, it's even beyond that here. It's follow the fence line to the red barn turn. Like, they don't even know the names of the roads.
Yeah. Or like,
where the quick and easy used to be. Turn
left. I love
the
stuff. Like, go down. Like, you ask an Amishman farmer directions in rural Pennsylvania and be like, well, you can go about half a rifle shot down the road here. Look for the big tree next to the mansion to make a right. You're like, well, that's actually not that bad. That's probably 3/4 of a mile, and I'll look for a big tree and a mansion. And you drive down, there's like 40 huge houses, and it's just giant cathedral oaks everywhere. And you're like, well, that's not going to work.
Which one of those is the mansion?
Yeah. They know because they've always called it that. But if I knew where the mansion was, I'd know where the part of the creek I'm trying to get to fish is.
Well, now that I've been here for darn near 20 years, I know where all the things used to be. But when I first got here, I did not.
Yeah, they're using out of business businesses that are just foundations or the triangle. What the hell is the triangle?
Yeah.
That's like the three-way road that comes in.
Where the old
in.
Center supply used to be. When exactly did this center supply go out of business? That would have been about 1978. Mm-hmm. Again, if I knew where this was, I would not be asking you for directions. Like, and that is a thing. I think they do it on purpose. All the old men I grew up around, I know they did it on purpose.
The landmarks are helpful now that the cities and states no longer think it's a priority to put street signs back up when they are taken out by drunk drivers or whatever. Because that's the other thing is I'll be going somewhere and it's like I need to turn right on Davis Street. and I'll have the GPS on, and I'll be like, that was Davis Street. But there was no sign. There was no, and where I live, you don't even know that it was a driveway versus a road, because they kind of look the same here. And I don't remember a lot of signless streets growing up, but now I see them all the time.
Like this one from Kevin. He says, I have a copy of an old deed that references a property corner to the stump where Jed shot the bear in a legal document.
I have a red oak in my property description.
Yeah, we have an oak or something as one of the corner markings.
Yeah.
Remember, Nicole, the Airbnb we shared a couple times down in Bastrop? And the chick, Kathy, that rented it to us, and said when you turn on this
really
road,
cool.
The sign's not there because it's been stolen so many times. The county gave up on replacing it, and it was called Lone Star Road.
Yeah.
And so because it was a cool name, people were just taking a ratchet and stealing the sign off the post.
Need to change the street names.
Or just, I don't know, 2 seconds with a tack welder on that nut, and ain't doing that shit no more.
Yep.
Of course, Billy Bob will be out there and cut the hole.
Yep.
Your copper thieves, they'll do it with their teeth.
The ones they have left.
Yeah, they eat sheetrock and gnaw through copper.
All right. Anything important going on in the world we should be talking about?
AI. I'm taking your course, so I'm exactly a week behind right now.
You need to catch up. This is a hard week for people. This is building email auto sequences, turning wins into proof today, problem content offer tomorrow, website landing pages on Thursday or on Friday. And then next week, we're going to lead off with stealing from others.
Cool.
Not really.
My philosophy has been, do each lesson all the way and do it well. And if that means I'm slower, then I'm slower.
Yeah.
But then after the first couple weeks, I was like, and I need to change how I'm organizing the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's worth stopping and doing that now that I see how it works.
I think people are figuring out why it's a 40-day course now, because the first couple of days you're like, oh, that shit was easy. And now we're kind of moving into like advanced marketing, like upper graduate level shit.
I also chose a business that does not exist, and that has slowed me down.
Oh, yeah. So one of the things we're doing today, we're building customer testimonials into messaging. And that I had to actually, in my morning briefing, tell everybody that might seem like an ethical issue, because we say if you don't have any yet, make some up based on what you know about your product. But my explanation was, you may have a business you're working on that don't exist yet or is very new. And you need to learn the skill. So I'm not saying to use the output. I'm saying you need to learn how to do it. Right. And like, that's really important marketing thing, is like customer testimonials. People will believe someone talking about you more than they'll believe you talking about yourself, for good or ill. Right. What I said this morning is, imagine this, John, you live next door to me and you have a contractor come in and talk about remodeling your bathroom for you. And he gives you a quote that seems about right. He seems like he's legit and he's been around a while, and he leaves. And I see him leaving, and I say, hey, John, are you thinking about having him do your bathroom? And you go, yeah, I used him 5 years ago. He was great. You're calling him right back up and fucking hiring him. But if I say, oh, that fucker?
Yep.
He was 3 weeks late. He had people walking through my house. I left my doors open. The dog got hit by a car. There's nothing he could say now to get you to hire him.
Yep.
So that third-party reference marketing telling a story, that's where we're at today with it.
Yep. But It's actually been pretty helpful in all the other stuff I'm working on, because, of course, I was using it already, but I use it better on the other thing. So I got a pretty fun image of a scared-looking rabbit and a sharp knife for my rabbit demo last weekend. Everyone's like, we love the image. I'm like, thanks, ChatGPT. Like, it wasn't even a good image generator that I used.
Yeah.
But it got attention, and we had fun knocking out some rabbits on Sunday.
Knocking out some rabbits.
Yeah. Well, really dislocating their heads from their necks, but you know.
Yeah. Well, that knocks them out.
It does knock them out all the way permanently. Yeah.
There's out and there's all the way out.
All the way out.
They're all the way out.
Yes. So that was fun. Tim Riley actually ended up out here. He brought rabbits out because I had rabbits, but they're actually a little small. And then he was like, well, I got 7. You want them? So then he came out, ended up talking to him for like 3 hours, which was great. And then, you know, we were going to sell the rabbits originally, but since Tim donated them, anybody who wanted a rabbit went home with a rabbit to eat. And
okay.
I need to send an email about favorite. So what's your favorite rabbit recipe, guys? Who has one?
I like rabbit stew. Little Hunter stew, just for me, like a little bit of flour on them, even though I don't usually do that. Just get some brown and brown them and make a stew like you would do with anything else. That's kind of my favorite thing to do with them, unless I'm going upscale. Like, I've done some really artsy-fartsy shit where you take the saddle, you make medallions, and you wrap it in bacon, and you, like, but if it's just, like, the whole rabbit, rabbit stew, especially if you got a couple squirrels, you make a true, like, Brunswick hunter stew with the two of them together. And when I do the rabbit, I bone it, and the squirrel, I quarter it and leave so you know the difference and kind of pick it up and eat it like a little chicken leg.
Yeah, rabbit's a little dangerous because their ribs are so small, so you have to be careful in the stew if you're going to use that
part. I cut the ribs off with shears.
But, like, the belly flap, you know, I don't know what that's called. I just thought that would be, the bacon cut. I decided that would be pretty good wrapped around a jalapeno popper.
Can't be bad.
Yeah.
Did you, like, take all your stewed rabbits and steal their rabbit bacon?
Yeah.
You don't need this. You get enough of them to make like a half a dozen or two
dozen.
There's
going to be a half dozen poppers. And I think you need to like pre-cook the popper and then wrap it so you don't tough cook the rabbit.
Yeah, you would.
Homemade chev in that. I think that'd be delicious.
Mm.
So.
What I've been cooking a lot of lately is all these new mushrooms I'm growing. And I'm becoming kind of hooked on that. It's too easy. I think you people that are in, you're always asking what can you grow in quantity that live in like small garden homes or apartments or townhouses or whatever. Freaking mushrooms. I have this thing called a boom room from North Sports, 2-foot by 3-foot footprint. And you can grow 4 or 5 pounds of mushrooms a week if you want to out of it.
Yeah, I want to get one of those.
It's too easy. It's just way too easy. And as much as I've struggled to do it, and I've had success and failure doing it with like a bag tent or whatever, I put this stuff in this thing and just exactly what they promised. Boom. And you guys, I think, Nicole, you probably saw the blue oysters I harvested yesterday. They look like kings. They're super tall, long stems. They look like $20 a pound mushrooms, which is, I guess, what they are. I'm growing lion's mane, Italian oysters, pink oysters, blue oysters, king oysters, chestnuts, pepinos. It's just too easy.
Yeah. Yep. I've been growing them in different ways with my coffee grounds. It's funny that you were like going down that road because I was already going down that road. And I'm like, it's like he's my brain, but he's a male in Texas. It's weird. I was like, dang it.
I'm the bacillium infecting your
brain. Yeah, it was totally. But I've actually managed to kill the mushroomy stuff too. So
It can do it.
I'm doing a series on how to kill oyster mushroom spawn. Yeah, exactly.
This is pink oyster, and you can see the bottom's kind of funky looking. It's all grown from stems. But this is the last culture last cluster I harvested. I just took the thick part of the stem and sliced it thin and put it in the bottom of the jar. The key when you're doing this, building these cultures up, is don't put it in the jar and fill the jar.
Yeah.
Put like an inch of grinds on top of your culture or your stems, whatever you're using, because you can take a tablespoon of this and make another one, right? And then once it fully colonizes, add another inch. And once it fully colonizes so that it doesn't get overwhelmed, so that something doesn't come in and compete with it, because that's what always shuts it down, is something else gets in there and it overtakes the mycelium of the oysters. But pink oyster, this shit is crazy. I'm afraid it's going to get out of the jar and colonize my face, man. It goes so freaking fast. This was put in this jar on 6/15 when I started it from one piece of, or a couple pieces of stem.
Yeah.
And it's, man, it's.
I just missed the flowering moment on my last one, and then bugs got in, and I was like, well.
Yeah, that'll ruin it.
And then it turned dark brown, and I was like, that's not good anymore. That's not compost.
Is there any calorie load to mushrooms?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Not a lot, though.
It's not a lot. It's a relatively low calorie. But it is also the highest value protein that you'll grow without growing an animal.
Got it.
Not because of the grams of protein, because of the amino acid spectrum in that it's a complete protein. So that's why a lot of vegans have really tuned in on mushrooms, because they can get a full protein profile from the mushrooms, along with their quinoa or whatever the hell else they're eating. But it's also like, it depends on how you cook them. A great deal of how, like people that say they don't like them, well, what'd you eat? White button mushrooms on top of a pizza? Yeah, those suck, right? Like a lion's mane, you can take that, throw it in a pan, and stick another pan on top of it and let it compress as it cooks. And if you season it right, you swear to God you're eating steak. You know, I did golden oysters with homemade bacon yesterday. I did little thin rashers or lardons of a bacon that I've made this weekend, and I threw that in the pan and cooked it halfway and then threw the golden oysters on top of it and then put a duck egg on top of that and a drizzle of Calabrian chili oil. It was freaking amazing. So even though they don't have a huge calorie load, you put bacon in there, they do.
Bacon fixes everything.
Well, and you're growing a product that's like a $20 to $30 a pound product.
Yeah.
So if you can grow 5 pounds a week of that, you're growing $100 worth of food a week. And you have variety too. Like I'm growing, like I said, lion's mane, it's like 5 different kinds of oysters, chestnuts, like, and the key though, if you really want to do it in a way that makes economic sense, is learning how, when you buy a $29 block of sawdust, instead of just fruiting that, which is a great way to get started, learning how to turn that into 10 and then to keep it going. To keep breaking off pieces, making new cultures, making new fruiting blocks or fruiting tubs and just keeping it going. Because unless you lose your cultures, you can literally buy it one time and go on with some species. Some are a little trickier, you know.
Yeah.
Oysters are stupid easy. So I got one for you, Nicole, on mushrooms, since you have mushrooms everywhere. Chanterelle season is kicking off. Do you know why certain mushrooms like morels and chanterelles are almost impossible to cultivate indoors?
I don't, but if I was going to guess from a morel standpoint, it's that they have a symbiotic relationship with the tree that they are associated with. And because that's hard to rep, like, how am I going to get a dying oak tree in my house?
Yep.
That would be my guess. So here, when you cultivate the morels, you do it outside. You make a patch outside. You go find it. So that would be my guess.
And you're absolutely right. And it what it really comes down to is there's three main kinds of mushrooms. And I'll probably say the first one wrong. Saprotrophic, which is what most of us grow indoors. And that means that they grow on decomposing dead organic matter. There's mycorrhizal mushrooms, and they do symbiotic relationships. Those are your chanterelles, right? Those are your morels. And so they need that living ecosystem to be part of. And then there's parasitic, and that basically they attack living things and infect it. And then a lot of the saprotrophic are actually like both. They'll start out as a parasite, but it's only when the plant is really weak. So those two we can grow indoors really easily. And I've always wondered about this, and I've started to like really learn more about it. And this is why we can't reliably cultivate some of these really expensive gourmet mushrooms, because we don't even actually know. We don't really know what the trigger is for it, one, to myceliate out, but two, to fruit. So we'll say, well, this particular thing is so, we can look and say, well, it likes ash and it likes oak and it likes these kinds of oaks. But then you can take that inoculated material from that tree and put it in another exact same species of tree 15 foot away, and it doesn't take.
Yeah.
And there might be a particular bacteria in there. There might be another fungi. It might be the age of the tree. It might be the light. We don't know this shit because they've been trying to do it with truffles forever, because the person that figures out how to reliably produce truffles on like just a woodlot that you inoculate your trees is got more money than King Midas. Right. But
right.
Nobody's like, for every 400 attempts, they get one. And yeah. No one knows why.
So with all of the erosion remediation that's been going on here by putting piles of crap logs, basically, that we're not going to turn the firewood around. Morels started popping up on my property about 2 years ago.
And, that's really cool.
And it's in a specific place mostly, and then also over at the pasture where the sheep are.
Yeah.
So the person on the property best at finding them is tactical. He'll be like, I found him. I'm like, don't pick it. I'm coming out.
Yeah.
And then I take 20 minutes to find the one that he just walked by. Yeah. It's like literally right there. Yeah.
And Dorothy's like, they're right there. Like, don't point.
Don't point.
And then all of a sudden they kind of like, I swear to God, they materialize like friggin' Star Trek beam down. But I'm reading Paul Stamets' most recent book, and he's talking about this and saying, like, what you're doing is exactly what you should be doing. And you can do that because you live in a place where there are morels already, right? Or you live in a place where there are already chanterelles. But, like, if you're trying to do it in a place where those don't exist, it's infinitely difficult. But he was also writing about how important it is that we figure out how to do it, because some of the stuff is going to go extinct because of the degradation of the wilderness that we have going on. I'm starting to understand why mushroom people are weird. Because they all seem a little bit weird. Not bad weird, just weird. And, like, when you start understanding what they know and how they're looking at the world, you're like, I'd be kind of weird, too, if that was my only thing and that's all I did every day. And most mushroom people, they become totally consumed by it. I would probably look at the world. It's not even weird then. It's just they're looking at it differently. And that seems weird because it's different.
It is different.
It is different.
But, yeah. I've always loved hunting wild mushrooms, so it's been
a natural instinct thing, yeah?
Yeah. Well, it's always like, well, I mean, and I'm that person. Like, I'm walking in the woods. What's that? Can I eat it?
Yeah.
That's kind of my relationship with things.
I think
what's
we as humans
that? Does that
like
have a medicinal
hunt.
Use?
I think we as humans like to hunt, and it doesn't matter if it's for food or seashells or weird things like Mr. Willis here likes. Like, he hunts for things to add to his giant haul of oddities. And I'm sure when you find, like, a really cool prison shiv, because you have those, you're like, oh, this is great. Like, I found this new thing. And I think we get this endorphin hit when we find the thing that we're looking for. And it's probably because we evolved as hunter-gatherers.
Yeah, that's definitely the case, because we don't spend a lot of time sitting looking at it once you have it. It's out to chase the next thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Shaking of the woods, man. I miss the days of that being a second tier mushroom, because they were everywhere for me. Pennsylvania, like, you can't not find those things this time of year.
Yeah, we would have gotten them a little earlier here, and we'll probably get them again in the fall.
Okay.
And maybe not right after it was 4,000 degrees outside. But you never know. There might be a microclimate somewhere.
Yeah.
We have one place where those pop up from time to time.
We have one microclimate this time of year. It's called hot and dry. That's it. The whole thing's one microclimate. It's as big as the county or the state damn near. It's getting there now. Like, I have to start certain areas watering trees. That's another, like, until I moved to Texas, I didn't understand you would water a mature adult tree. No, you don't do. Yeah, you do.
Yep. But has biochar changed your garden on that? Or do you
My garden is not great this year, but it has nothing to do with pests, unless you're going to consider the animal I'm going to get to a pest. It has nothing to do with weeds. It's the chicken problem. My giant Jersey chickens are going in my garden and destroying things, and I have to decide, do I want to invest in chicken repellent, or do I need new types of chickens? Because I'm not raking the frickin' shit in the chicken duck coop. I'm not doing it. And when I got rid of chickens, it turned into a matted mess. And now I got chickens in there. I mean, I have all the beautiful beans this year, and they just went and smashed them down. I'm just set so far back. It's almost like throw your hands up, and it is what it is. And they're not hurting the things that are on trellises. So cucumbers, I've got plenty. The pepper plants, they kind of go around them, and they don't really hurt them, so I've got plenty of peppers, but all my prostrate stuff is all just wrecked. They pulled the freaking sweet potato slips out of the ground. They dug holes. Like, I've got chicken holes in my freaking garden.
Yep.
And I look at that hole and go, if I killed you, I could just put you in that hole and you would be compost. And that's literally how I'm thinking at this point.
Jack's in the cycle of no chickens, chickens, no chickens, yep. chickens.
Well, we got the Bantam chickens, and they stayed out of the garden, but they shit all over the porch. And then we got the big fat chickens, and apparently, even with clipped wings, they can get up 2 feet. No problem.
Sounds like you need cattle panels.
Yeah, I need a 22.
He needs an anti-chicken defense system. I use the little, they have, I think they're 18 inches tall.
Yeah.
Picket fence cheap rolls at Lowe's. I put those in my raised beds around the outside when I have something trying
they'll
to
go right
in.
Over them.
Oh,
they'll fly right over them.
Yeah.
They'll go right over them.
What about
I never had this problem with, because I had 2 foot high raised beds.
Yeah.
And I've had multiple different chickens, and I've never had a chicken in the garden problem until these freaking things. And I only got them because I thought they might make a good meat chicken. But they do not. I killed the rooster because he got to be a problem. He was really overbreeding the girls. I mean, they have like red patches on them.
Yeah.
So I eliminated him. The fascia on the, it looked like I skinned it. The legs looked like little deer legs. Like silver skin on them. The breasts on this bird, and this bird's over a year and a half old, are like super thin. I'm like, these are not a meat bird, so they might be dog food.
Stew food.
They're not even worth it. They weren't. It wasn't worth cleaning the damn thing. It really wasn't. I almost quit in the middle, and I felt guilty of, you know, wasting it. But with the dogs, I can just hear. Which, John, you know that's wrong. You do that all the time, and you get yelled at for it when you do them a rabbit that way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we just hit a rabbit over a stall horse, and it lights out.
I just saw those people losing their mind on you that one time, and I'm like, they're like, that dog's going to get sick. Like, what do you think a canine in the wild eats?
Yeah. Yeah, those are the same.
Great week.
Those are the same crazy cat people that are trapping wild cats and castrating them and trying to adopt them out as pets.
Yeah, because feral cats always turn into such warm, loving critters, you know.
Sometimes they do.
Some, but how feral? For how long?
Right. And there's know? And there's always a better option.
I've seen people take some pretty decent approaches to it where they start feeding them and they put like a chemical that basically sterilizes them in their food. And then they just stop reproducing. So you don't have like 8,000 cats at the local park. Okay, I get that. Or you could trap them and you could sterilize them and release them. Or you could just eliminate them. I know that sounds horrible, but.
Yeah.
So we have a question from Colin that was answered in the comments. Can mushroom growers make more nutrient-dense mushrooms than something found in the wild? And then Divine Fungi says, in my experience, just growing mushrooms inside changes the color, texture, and smell so much, I'd say indoor grown mushrooms are 50 to 70% the quality of the same species grown outdoors. So I don't know.
I don't really think that's the case. The primary difference in indoors versus outdoors is your CO2 oxygen ratio and the lighting. And that's more of a form than a nutrient quality thing. It'd be interesting, like, two of the same oyster mushrooms and have, a spectrographic analysis done, but I don't know that they're less or more, and I don't know that you can do anything to make them more. I think that will always be a function of what are they decomposing. So it might be that this particular mushroom growing outside might be more nutrient-dense because of what it's growing on, where when you're growing indoors, generally you're using waste products. You're using, you know, oysters, straw is common. Most other mushrooms we grow indoors, we're going to use things like sawdust. And the number one easily acquired version of that now is hardwood pellets. And you pour hot water on them and you get perfect mushroom substrate. A lot of people are growing with coconut coir as well. Well, I don't know. But I don't think there's probably a dramatic difference. But then again, like, what are you talking? Because is it apples to apples? If they're both golden oysters or they're both blue oysters, that's one thing, but you know, you're not growing chanterelles indoors. You're unlikely to be growing maitake. It can be done, but it's really difficult. So those types of mushrooms, they have a biological relationship with this larger ecosystem that we, like I said, we don't fully understand. So we're not going to replicate that indoors, but an oyster mushroom pretty much is a very aggressive fungi that decomposes carbon. I don't think there's much difference. And the color is primarily a function of light. So if you increase your light, you're going to get different colors. And the form itself is primarily a function of how much CO2 and how much oxygen. Most yep. people grow trippy mushrooms indoors. No, they don't. Many people do, but I wouldn't say most people do.
Don't those just grow?
A lot of them do just grow. But, okay, like, the other side of that one, though, is, are you sure? Right? When you turn the cow patty over and the little purple, are you sure? Right? And are you sure that you got the dosage right? Are you sure it's the same species that you got the dosage on? Because one of my favorite stories was Paul Stamets on Joe Rogan, and he was talking about the first time he ever did psychotropic mushrooms, and he got this whole bag of them, and he had no idea how to use them, and he got no advice, and he's out in the woods camping, and he just eats the whole freaking bag. And it sounds like the scene in Forrest Gump where Lieutenant Dan is up on the mast of the ship. He ends up climbing this tree. He's up in this tree like 70 feet up in a tree in the middle of a storm, holding onto the tree, rocking back and forth. And he says as he looks out at the other tree swaying in the wind, he can feel his hairs on his arm waving back and forth like he's attached to the other trees. So I'm just going to suggest, if you're going to use trippy mushrooms, get some help, know your dosage, and be sure of what you're taking, because that worked out for him. But there was also the chance that he would have decided somewhere in the middle of this, I can fly. Because that literally happened to a teacher at like the next school over from mine when I was in Jacksonville, Florida, in grade school. Some kids at a junior high put LSD in a teacher's drink, and she ended up jumping out of like a third-story window in the school. It's not shit to be screwing around with without someone looking after you. Don't do drugs. Don't do drugs irresponsibly. Because I'm not going to say not to do drugs while I'm sitting here drinking coffee.
Cheers. Except for it's empty.
That was a good video too, huh, Nicole?
Which? Oh, yeah. The first guy to ever drink coffee?
Yeah.
Yep.
Alertness juice. So I took some beans and I put them in hot water. Did you put them in boiling water? No, that makes them taste terrible. This is going to catch on. I predict in the future there'll be entire buildings dedicated to nothing but alertness juice. And that people will argue over why their way of making alertness juice and their pretentiousness is better than somebody else's. This tastes terrible. It's pretty good if you add sugar and cow boob juice to it.
How calorie dense are mushrooms?
Not. Let's find out.
They have a decent amount of vitamin D in them, actually. Hmm. Actually. Because I always found it interesting that in the dark of late fall, early winter, there are just mushrooms everywhere and it's dark.
Yeah.
And then there's D in those.
So a pound of oysters will have 150 to 180 calories. 3 grams of protein, 6 grams of carbs, though most are fiber, so good for keto, less than 1 gram of fat, 12 to 14 grams of total protein in a pound of mushrooms. That's not insignificant for something you can grow in your house as easily as you can do it.
Yes.
But it's not a calorie crop. It's an adjunctive thing. But it's incredibly, I think the health benefits are beyond just things like vitamin D. There's things that we don't understand about mushrooms in general. I mean, I still use every day in my first cup of coffee, a half a teaspoon of Sacred 7 mushroom powder. Every single day. And I feel like it's made a difference in my focus, my mental acuity, all of that.
Are you going to shift over to those people who make it fresh?
Maybe.
I'm going to try theirs.
He's supposed to be getting back to me on being in the MSB. He reached out and I said, okay, here's what to do. And then he didn't do it.
Yeah.
So when people don't do things they say they're going to do, then I stop thinking about them.
I gotcha.
Yeah, but there are a lot of people that are, a lot of mushroom growers are going into that because they can take all their surplus they can't sell and either dehydrate or freeze dry it, powder it, and either bottle it or capsule it and sell it and have a much more shelf stable, even though it's fresh. It's still like you harvest mushrooms and put them in the refrigerator. You better use them in a day or three, especially most species. Some will hold longer. Like king oyster, you can get about 14 days without losing anything. But most of them start to go downhill really fast. So it's the same farmer problem that every farmer has. Learning to grow the thing is not hard. Learning to sell the thing and move the thing before it spoils, that's the hard part. So when you do that with a mushroom, you make it shippable. You make it a very high margin product as well. You could go in that business, Nicole.
Yeah. Well,
you have a freeze dryer.
I do, and I'm you know, in the series of growing mushrooms rather than just hunting them, where I have had success and had the kill shot. But Divine Fungi says there's a compound in oyster mushrooms that helps longevity. The name escapes me, but supposedly it's only beneficial if you eat them once a week. More than that, it loses its benefit. That sounds very complex. How does somebody figure that out?
I don't know that I believe that either. If you said you have to eat them at least once a week, I might buy it.
Well, he says that you have to eat them once a week, but yeah. You're not supposed to eat them more than once. That's a lot. If I'm making a world without rule of law compound, would mushrooms be a waste of space?
I can't.
I can't either.
I can't bother.
John, this is all you.
That's all you, John.
I'm gonna add any benefit I can take. I use a lot of mushroom tinctures. I take Sacred 7 every morning. If you've been taking Sacred 7 for a long time, be aware that they have doubled the dosage now. So where I used to take, if it was a teaspoon before, it's now 2. So be aware of that. Someplace in time that has changed, and I've been taking the half dosage all this time. I'm gonna use everything that I can possibly take that gives me an advantage. So if we're putting it up for without rule of law, why not have the knowledge now how to grow it? It'll be easier then.
Well, and if you're doing it indoors, I just said it's a 2x3 foot footprint. I struggle to understand the person who would be like, I got something everywhere. I could have ammo stacked there, and this. I can't, because without rule of law, like, you're not preparing for the right thing.
I know.
You're preparing for without rule of law. What you better be preparing your asses for is excessive rule of law. I did a video on this before I even knew who Nicole Sauce was. That's how long I've been talking about it.
They've got these automated Viosun tents that are 4x4. They look like a 3D printer. It looks like a damn computer case. Super futuristic. I know Jack's got a deal. You have some deal with the Boom Room guys?
Yeah. Yeah. What? Like I said, it's like a 2 foot by, it's not even 2 foot by 3 foot. It's like 3 foot by 18 inches. Like it's 3 foot by a foot and a half. You know, I mean, I don't know what world you would exist in that you were like, man, I need that freaking 5.5 square feet back. I got to have it for without rule of law, because that's where I'm going to keep my RPG ammo. I don't know, man.
Yeah. It's
the things that these people think they're preparing for, if those things actually happen and you're a problem, they're going to drop one cluster munition on your fucking head and you're going to be irrelevant. Like, we have munitions, we refer to them in the military as grid square eliminators.
Well, I mean, I look at it as, you know, I have people come in, and Glenn was like, hey, do you want me to get rid of all this scrap metal? I'm like, no, I'm keeping all that scrap metal. It's not in my way at all. And if society ever collapses, I might need that scrap metal.
Yeah.
I keep that. I get what he's saying. I keep a ton of shit around, like old jars that I've never used. Yet I have 80,000 egg crates. So if I ever have to go in the egg business, and they're not in my way. I mean, I have shipping containers.
I got
full
you. You got space.
And I get what he's saying.
I got space, and it can be a detriment, though, because then you do the kind of shit you're talking about. We about once every 5 years get a dumpster, and we clean shit out, because I'm a junk man. I'm from a long line of junk men. I can't imagine what waits for me after my dad passes and I have to go clean that place out. And the only reason I'll do it is God knows what might still be there that I actually want. I mean, I'll probably find 1% of stuff worth taking, and the rest of it's probably getting a bulldozer and a match.
I have a private Facebook group that myself and Amanda and a couple of other people are in. So they know where it came from, what we paid for it, and how I would unload it in the future and what I believe the value is, as well as the story. Now, if the internet were to go out, they're completely screwed. But if the internet goes out, they've got bigger problems than that.
The whole internet go out thing, like, the excuses that come that tie to that, like the internet's going to go down and you don't have any Bitcoin, or the internet's going to go down. Like, I promise you, if the internet goes down permanently, you'll have bigger problems to worry about than all of the things people think that they'll have to worry about, like living.
Sure.
Like, that will be your problem. Because for the internet to go down and stay down, and I'm not talking about your neighborhood, right? Because the infrastructure got damaged in a storm. I'm talking about, like, mass out everywhere. The problem you have to be the case with nobody putting it back together. I mean, like, we kind of actually know how to do this now. We're not inventing it from scratch with Al Gore anymore. I think we would not let that happen.
I mean,
I'm worried about, like you said, war, terrorism, or my own government.
I'm pretty sure my top concern when the internet goes out is going to be if I can access my Bitcoin.
Aren't pacemakers on an app now? Like, most implants and stuff are app-based.
Well, all the people they say are going to shut down the internet are all the people that make all their money off the internet. Do you think Mark Zuckerberg wants the internet to go down? Do you think Elon Musk wants the internet to go down? Do you think Jeff Bezos wants the internet to go down? Do you think your government that uses it to surveil you wants the internet to go down? They're going to shut it off. Who are they? Who would benefit by shutting off the internet? See how quiet it got? There is no answer to that question. I just believe these people are evil, but they do things that benefit them. And I don't see any way that they benefit from that. It's the best mass control device they've ever had. Sure, we use it to push back and to fight back, but we're the vast minority. I think one of the biggest mistakes that we make in our space is, and I don't mean necessarily this group, but as a whole, we think that more people think like us than think like them, and that is not true. That is just not true. We're not even 10% of the population. We're not. I bet we're not 5. What do you think, Nicole? You think we're 5% of the population?
Maybe.
And
maybe
I'm not just saying like homestead, gardens. I'm just saying, in general, philosophically, from a government control standpoint, I think we're less than 5%.
Now, there are people in this live stream right now who would be pro my county having zoning to preserve farmlands because there's too much density being built in, which I'm completely against. As a homesteader who values the peace and quiet around her because nobody's building.
Yeah.
I think the minute you put that control in those hands, it's the tool by which the opposite of that will eventually happen.
Every time.
They want tax revenue. And but I have been in debates with people in our community who are very active in our community who are like, yeah, but we need to protect the farmland. And I'm like, here's how you protect your farmland. You buy your farm.
Yep.
You run your farm and you get your friends to buy the farm next to you and they run their farm. And then we keep the government out of our face. That's the best.
And every time somebody says the word zoning, you punch it right back up their ass. Because if there is no zoning, then you can't zone out the farm. Because every weapon is eventually turned around on its creator.
Yeah.
Every single time. I mean, it's what we're doing with the internet, isn't it? Like I said, it's a mass surveillance, a mass control device, and we use it for the exact opposite. But we're little, and they are big. So if they get zoning into your place where there is no zoning, they will use it against you eventually. And because the next thing that will come are boilerplate codes to protect the farmers. Oh, this farm has to go, and that farm has to go, and that farm
how
has
you
to go.
How you put mom and pop farms out of business. That's how you do it. You pair it with, you make it so they can't break off 5 acres to pay off debt or pay off tax debt, and then they lose the whole thing. They have to sell the whole thing. And then it's not worth as much because you can't be flexible with it. And then a developer buys it, and they get it rezoned because they have the capacity to pay for the process of getting it rezoned. And then they make it into a housing development. go look at it, you know, like go to Texas sometimes and look at some of those housing developments that are out there, or Oregon, or like, I literally left Oregon because this is one of the big things. It wasn't just the rain.
Why does the farmer sell his farm to a subdivision developer in the first place?
Because he wants the money.
Because he can't make money with the farm anymore.
Yeah, massive amount of money. And he doesn't have any.
The farmer isn't a farmer. He's a farmer's kids that didn't have a farm in the first
place. Or the farmer doesn't have kids to take over the farm.
Yeah.
He did it as long as he could. There was nobody else there to take it, so he took the buyout and went and did something else for the last years of his life.
A lot of these farmers, too, they do have kids, and they go to the kids, and the kids don't want the farm. Because the kid thinks, well, dad will just give me the farm, and dad's like, no, hold on a second. I poured my heart and guts into this for 50 years. I got 20 years to live to retire. I want to sell the farm, go to the bank and finance. And the kid doesn't want to run the farm. So he just waits for dad to die. And dad says, fuck it. Like you said, John, and just sells the farm and takes that money to retire on. And then the kids, you know, maybe get what's left.
Yep. Yanasa Ventures, Yanasa TV talks about this. Every video he does is something like this. There was just a farmer in Tennessee that had an excavator on his farm property, and they came in and they made all kinds of hassle for him because he had this excavator on the farm, and it was a piece of equipment that was considered and deemed to be a commercial piece of equipment. But you see the overreach everywhere, but it's happening in Tennessee. You see all these farm areas, and all of a sudden you're driving through all this farmland on both sides, and boom, there's three-story stacking packs, you know, micro housing to house 200, and they call them low-income housing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do those look like in 20 years?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do they look like in 5 years?
True.
They're made of paper mache for the most part.
Well, the other thing, something that a friend of mine, he was an economist. His work was a lot on what happens if, in order to build one of those, the developer is required to pay for the infrastructure to support it. So roads, water, power, sewage. A lot fewer of those happen because the financial argument does not make sense for all of that infrastructure plus the development. So it naturally balances if you have to actually pay for the whole thing of supporting a dense, low income or whatever, or even suburban like McMansionville.
Yeah. Yeah.
Suddenly that house that was $500,000 is $1 million and then nobody wants it.
Well, you see them pop up next to Walmart because Walmart does have to put in all the infrastructure.
My only issue with that is then the city or county, whatever, turns around and tells you how you have to build the road and how you have to, and then they want to take it over. Right? So you pay for it, then they take it over and they spec out the way to, because that has happened in some places. The developer has to put in the infrastructure, but then they spend billions on the infrastructure, millions on the infrastructure. And it doesn't have to cost that much. Do you know why freaking cul-de-sacs are so big?
Why?
Boilerplate regulations stipulate that the largest fire truck made has to be able to get around in the cul-de-sac. Doesn't matter if the county doesn't have the largest fire truck. But it still has to be. So they'll have more money in concrete in a cul-de-sac than they do on the road that leads to the cul-de-sac sometimes because of the pure volume of material it takes to build that cul-de-sac. And that kind of shit, like if you're going to say, I have to put the road in to develop the property, fine. Then it's my road, stay the fuck out, and you don't get to say anything about it. And then I'm okay with that. But what if it's not right? That's up to the person buying the house. They can evaluate that for themselves and decide, if I want to sell the houses I'm developing, then I need to put an infrastructure in that will make my customers happy. Like the market actually has a solution to problems. It's crazy.
Do we want to talk about UBI?
Only other than what I said about it, I think UBI is like plugging a power strip into itself and thinking you made something. That's like, where's the money going to come from to fund it? Well, tax people. Who? The rich people.
Who's the rich people? You're the rich people. People don't realize that when they say that. They are the rich people usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll print it. Okay. So then if we could wave a magic wand and make UBI a thing and say, you know what, you should be able to live reasonably well on $60,000 a year. That's $5,000 a month. And we said every person that's over 18 that lives by themselves gets $5,000, and maybe married couples get $7,500. And we just did that. The inflationary effect of that would offset it to where it might as well be nothing in a year or two. Because when everybody has money and everybody spends money, what happens to the price of all the goods? They go up. Right? Because think about any, it's like I'm talking about economic literacy here. What is the first thing a car salesman asks you when you go to buy a car? They never ask you, what's your price range? They ask you what? What payment are you trying to get into?
For 9 years.
They sell you a payment. So you get a number, it's $550 a month. What's your down payment? I have $5,000. There's your section of cars you can look at. And that's how everything works in our society. Everything's credit. Everything that we buy is actually a liability instead of an asset. We buy a payment. So if you start giving people that amount of money, they just immediately allocate it to what they can afford in payments. And you don't get more houses by printing more money. So you start back to the old problem. You got more dollars chasing less goods. We have a supply side issue with housing. We don't have a capital side issue. There's not enough supply for the people that want to buy houses, for the kind of houses they want to buy, that they can afford where they want to live. And most of it, not all of it, most of it's due to regulation.
But we can't talk about that because
No. You
can't get rid of regulation.
I mean, why can't I very simply go out and raise some money, buy 20 acres, and start putting up 800 square foot small homes, not even tiny homes, all off grid and just start selling them? Why can't I do that? Because I can't. I mean, I can get there, but I can't just do it. I can't just go, like, once you own the land, shouldn't you just be able to do that? Wouldn't that solve a lot of problems? I could probably do that. And I could probably sell that house sitting on a half acre. It'd probably be a dirt road going to it and a gravel driveway. But I could probably do that, and my cost of production would be about $35,000. I could sell them for $65,000 and fill every one of them right now if I was allowed to do it.
And if you look at 100 years ago how housing rolled out, that is why we have a rich breadth of different sized homes near each other. One of my favorite things about driving around the back roads of Tennessee is big, luxurious house with a pool and fields of hay right next to single wide.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I love it. And that's true diversity.
Yep.
And that's what they're trying to get rid of.
Where I grew up, you got little dumpy houses, you got old homesteads, you had big houses. You go into town, which is a town of like 1,300, and you got row houses. And even those are all different one street to the next. That goes back to like the Reading Company and the company store type days. There was still diversity in that. And, you know, getting out of town, when I say go to town, people probably get it wrong. I might get on my bike at my grandma's and drive through three towns on a bike back then, right? And and not even like in 20 minutes. And like you said, there's a mobile home, there's a homestead from the 1800s, there's a brand new house. Like, yeah. And what do we have now is most of the subdivisions were all built at, you know, the subdivision was built in mass. It was developed over 1 to 5 years. There's three models, and the only divergence then is what color, you know, what kind of siding. This one's brick, this one's, you know, like you pick your little variables in there.
And bay then, window, no bay window.
But the big problem is these houses are built in a way that they severely degrade in quality over about 20 years. So if you build them all within a couple of years of each other, they all start to fall apart about the same time. And since everybody bought a payment instead of a house and they bought a 30-year mortgage, they have 10 more years to pay on the house, and they don't have any money to fix the problems, and the whole neighborhood goes. The whole subdivisions, they all go to shit 20 to 25 years after they're built. You can drive through and see it. And then all the, like, what did you used to do? 1975, you have a house. You need to fix the roof. You ain't got enough money. You rented out a room, right? Or you pulled an RV on it and you rented it to somebody till you got enough money, and then you got rid of them and you fixed the roof. there's so many places you can't even do that anymore. You can't rent a room because you can't park in the street, and you got two cars, so there's no place in the garage for your third car that your tenant would use. Sometimes it's not even a direct prohibition. It's an indirect prohibition.
Yeah. Which goes back to, if you drop somebody into the 50s to live that luxurious lifestyle, how luxurious was it really?
It wasn't.
You still had to get up there and take your own shingles off sometimes.
It's a fantasy, man. Go to any old house, like up where you live all the way up to where I grew up, an older house that nobody's done anything with, and I guarantee you there's a room in that house that you go in, it's got that 1970s, 80s looking
paneling.
And if you pull that motherfucker off, do you know what's under it? Another layer of paneling.
Mm.
It's the same kind. It just got old and shitty, and they just threw it. They didn't even take it down. They threw it up. And when you pull that back, you're going to see like old lady wallpaper from the 20s. And when you pull that off, you got plaster and shiplap. Right? And every house is like that. But you think it was glorious because somebody told you that so you could be mad at the boomers who weren't even born yet when that house was actually having all that done to it. The class warfare thing is ridiculous.
Oh, the paneling I've pulled out of my home. There's one more room. One more. It's like half torn out already.
And you know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that paneling.
Oh, yeah. I know that. I had it here. I had it painted white for a while because I didn't want to deal with drywall.
You always find the one house where they really didn't think about it and they got to the end and they had a strip about that big to go.
And
instead of like pulling the one down and cutting it in half so that you kind of put a seam that made sense, there's just that little like 4-inch strip of it in the corner.
Yeah. The 4-inch strip.
The 4-inch strip. See, she knows.
Yep. I didn't have that here. He was actually pretty good at hanging paneling. Yeah.
Well, the guy that built your house seemed like he knew what he was doing.
Well,
in some ways.
2x4 joists. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah. I didn't know about that.
Oh, yeah, that's my ceiling in my living room is so low.
Yeah.
Because we took those all out 2 years ago. That's why that floor got redone. Ripped it all out. I was like, why isn't it level? I'm like, oh, that's why it's not level. Because this is not how you build a floor. But there's also
no ceiling. You had to bring it up to increase to what, 2x6s?
I went 2x6, yeah, because 2x8 was going to be too much.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
I'd be walking in there like this. If it was
And it's really well insulated. Some things he was trying to be cutting edge, sort of a regenerative building approach here with the solar aspect, but it was in the 80s when he was building this.
And people were still figuring it out.
Yeah. So, it's okay. I like living where I live. I don't love my house, but it's okay. The location's more important, and I love the outside of my house. So that's what matters.
Yeah.
So, well, guys, looks like we're coming up on 2 hours. Let's go once around the horn. I'm surprised we didn't do any business entrepreneurship at all.
No, little AI, but not much.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask about supply chains, but I'll follow up later about that.
John?
All right. I do a live video every night at 9 o'clock on YouTube. You can check that out. I've got 6,500 some actual videos on there, different than the lives. SOETacticalGear.com is the website if you want to see what we build.
I'm Jack Spirico, host of the Survival Podcast, 17 years running officially last month. We hit 17 year anniversary. I did a show yesterday. Y'all might, if you're not from my audience, might really find interesting on 8 mega shifts over the next 10 years, AI being one of them, but 7 other huge ones that'll be available on the site. If you go there and just scroll down a little bit, that'll be episode 3,696. So yeah, we've been doing this a while. Also, if you have not yet checked out my book, Laws of Life, please do so. You can just go to Amazon and search for Laws of Life and you'll find it.
I'm Nicole Soss from the Living Free Podcast, and I do roast delicious coffee at hollowroast.com. You can get K-cups or fresh whole bean coffee, hollowroast.com. And I have air conditioning in the roasting shack again, so thanks for everybody who helped me with that pre-buy. It went in this weekend during the rabbit processing. Our next event here is a canning class on the 26th of July. Only 8 spots and one's already gone. So there are 7 spots left. Check that out. TheLivingFreePodcast.com. What do you got, Jack?
I almost forgot. I wanted to shill this. If you do not own Kentucky Rebel Scum's hot sauces, I highly recommend you check it out. He's now got a dedicated site instead of Half Pond Homestead, KentuckyRebelScum.com, and this is the sorghum hot sauce. This is freaking fire in a good way. You got to give it a shot.
Nice.
All right. See you guys next month.
See you guys. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.